The killing of a Canadian off Honduras last week has us wondering about the state of security onshore. 58-year-old Millen Eggermeyer was attacked on a sailboat by armed men about 30 kilometers off the north coast. But more and more Canadians are beginning to view Honduras as a warm resort and retirement spot where a little loony goes a long way. In peak season, two charters a week fly out of Toronto's Pearson Airport. But Canadian journalist Dawn Paley sees a darker side to a country still recovering from a coup, and she's written about it in the current edition of This magazine. And Dawn Paley joins me from Vancouver. Welcome to Dispatches.
Thank you very much for having me.
You write that Honduras isn't for the faint of heart. It's one of the most dangerous countries in the world. Why do you say that?
Well, Honduras has the whole 20th century and until now ongoing has been a country with a great deal of conflict and also, you know, extreme poverty. So these two factors together means that it's not a place where it's safe to walk down the street. Something very common is armed robberies taking place on public transportation, so in taxis or in buses, pickpockets and that kind of stuff. The murder rate's about 10 times as high as it is in the United States. So it's a place where there's just a very high level of violence on a daily basis.
I didn't know it was that high. The country suffered a coup last year. The government was overthrown. How did that affect security?
It's been disastrous. President Zelaya was removed by the military on June 29th last year. And since then, there's been a great deal of repression because, of course, there was a huge popular uprising, you know, across all sectors of Honduran society, with the exception of a small elite that did support the coup. So added on to the sort of very high level of generalized violence in Honduras, you had an extra layer of politically targeted violence and generalized violence as well against demonstrators and protesters. So it certainly worsened, I would say, since the coup happened, the security situation.
In your article, you quote the former tourism minister who was deposed in the coup. What did he say about the security situation in his country?
He said, "I could show you the beaches, I could show you the Mayan ruins, but I'd be lying to you, and I'm going to show you photos of the streets of the capital of Honduras, Tegucigalpa, and I'm going to show you, you know, what it looks like. It looks like, you know, police and army repressing civilians and demonstrators. That's the real picture of Honduras that he wanted to sort of share with his counterparts in Central America."
It's kind of ironic, though, isn't it? It's cheap to live in Honduras, paradoxically, because it's risky to live there.
Even people who are working in Honduras, which has an extremely high proportion of people who are employed, are sort of in the informal sector or underemployed, you know, might make $1 or $2 an hour. So someone with a police pension, for example, like Rick Mowers, who I met, who's living there, former police officer, living on, you know, $1,500 a month, like royalty. And I'm sure his pension's more than that. He didn't actually tell me how much it was. But for the price of paying your rent up here in Canada, you can have everything you want done. You can have a car and driver. You can have a cook. You can have, in that material sense, you could sort of live like a god.
Remind me how that risk, though, translates down to the level of a Canadian tourist. I mean, what did the retired couple from Quebec tell you on the beach that day?
They traveled every year. They went to Honduras, I think, specifically because they just hadn't been there, and they knew what the beach lifestyle was, and they were kind of doing the best to live it up on the beach there in Honduras. But they were saying to me, you know, we haven't really met anybody here. We haven't met any locals. We haven't gone to town. We've just really been stuck here on the beach, which maybe doesn't sound so bad, but it's not like a, you know, the industry there isn't as developed as it is, for example, in Cuba or in Mexico, where you have entertainment and, you know, casinos and all that kind of stuff that might sort of help fritter the time away. So basically, they're just saying, we're just sitting here on the beach, and then we go back to our hotel room. We can't do what we feel like here. Even walking 200 meters down the beach off of this sort of hotel-sanctioned area is dangerous.
I was in a condo complex in nearby Costa Rica last year. It had armed guards, 24/7, bars on the condo windows. Was security, though, at any more of a heightened level than that at the resort's retirement complexes you saw in Honduras?
You do have certainly more of a military and police presence on the street. So, for example, when I'm traveling around Honduras, I take the bus, and two times on the way out to this resort, my whole bus was pulled over, once by the army and once by the police. All the men have to descend from the bus. All of their belongings are searched. You know, people are interrogated, and then the bus is allowed to continue on. And I don't think that, you know, you'd necessarily experience that type of thing in Costa Rica to that extent. So there's that sort of added layer of just the generalized violence that's happening in addition to the private security and the 24/7 guards and all that kind of stuff.
What have you heard about security at sea? I mean, how common are stories of piracy, of attacks on shipping in Honduran waters, like the one that claimed the life of the Canadian last week?
I actually don't think that that's common at all. I mean, I was very surprised to see that news piece come out. And actually, the first thing that came into my mind was that these communities in the area, the Garifuna people in the area where, in Trujillo, where the Canadian developer is setting up this retirement resort, historically, they were actually, they worked for the British as sort of anti-pirate. They were the experts in sort of when there was piracy at sea, the Garifuna people were called upon to sort of prevent that piracy from happening. And that was the first thing that struck me. I thought, okay, there is certainly a historical precedent for this, but I've never heard of an incident happening like this.
People who knew the Canadian gentleman say the Honduras is worried now about repercussions on the tourist industry. How important are Canadian tourists to the Honduran economy?
Very important, specifically in the tourism sector. You know, some hotels that I visited, Canadians make up 70 to 80% of all of the visitors. You've got a couple of charter flights a day, I believe, leaving from Toronto, and then sometimes they're also leaving from Montreal directly to these resort towns. So Canadians are vital, certainly in the tourism industry in Honduras.
Now there's a push to make the area specifically a retreat for retired Canadian snowbirds. Would you tell me about this colorful Canadian behind the development you toured?
Well, Randy Jorgensen was a muffler salesman originally, and then he somehow acquired a few thousand pornography videos and ended up transforming that into a video store chain called Adults Only Video. And he's been living in Honduras now for, I think, more than a few decades. I mean, he's been down there for a while. And over the last few years has developed this housing complex. I mean, it's a new idea that he's trying to market and sell. It's sort of a frontier development, as you might say, kind of using the idea that might be familiar to people of, you know, go retire somewhere warm like Florida, Costa Rica, and then just sort of tacking or Honduras onto the end there. So that's Randy Jorgensen's big project, is to try to market retirement homes specifically for Canadians on the north coast of Honduras.
The indigenous people in the area say 3 years ago, one of their own unscrupulous former leaders sold their land right out from under them to Jorgensen, and now they want it back. So how's Jorgensen responded?
Well, when I interviewed him, he basically discounted their claims and said they just, you know, it's a form of extortion.
Extortion.
That's the word that he used, that he said that, you know, that according to his understanding, it's a very common tactic used by local people to try to get something out of a foreign investor. But of course, history tends to support the claim that a lot of these land deals for large landowners and foreign landowners tend to be done in ways that, you know, are often a little bit suspect, I would say. I mean, there's a lot of insecurity around land title and land tenure.
Is that right? Are land disputes common in Honduras?
Very common. I mean, you could say that that's the root of many, many conflicts and wars that have been going on, you know, throughout so many years.
It kind of goes without saying that security follows on from a land dispute, but I wonder if there's any concern that this dispute could escalate into direct action where Canadian tourists might be caught in the middle.
Well, I mean, I think that would be the worst-case scenario. And unfortunately, I don't think that it can be discounted. The issue is that they don't have access to the court system because there's no lawyers that will work for indigenous folks, in this case, Garifuna people. They've been unable to find a lawyer in any of the surrounding towns.
Why?
Basically, there's no money in it. I mean, these people do not have the money to pay a lawyer who could much easier work for, you know, a corporate client or, you know, one of the foreign landowners themselves. So, you know, these avenues are not available to them in terms of actually making that claim to the land. And it's in those situations when people choose to do things like reoccupy lands.
Has that happened? Have previous land disputes turned nasty?
Yes, I mean, more times than I could count. And, you know, as recently as now, I mean, there's ongoing land reoccupations happening in a region just a little bit south of where this development is called Aguan. And, you know, the people that are occupying the land, they actually have title to it, but they're being kept off it by private security guards.
So what question do you think Canadians would do well to ask themselves when they consider Honduras?
Well, I think the question is really to think about who might live there already. I mean, this idea that you can move somewhere empty and you know, have your little house or your mansion or whatever it's going to be, it's a very colonial idea. And I think Canadians need to really think deeply about whose land they're on here in Canada and also whose land they're going to go take in Honduras, and just sort of just ask yourself that question, and it will lead you into a whole nother story than what you're being sold.
Thank you very much for telling me about your time there.
It was my pleasure. Thanks, Rick.
Dawn Paley's a Canadian journalist based in Vancouver. Her piece on Honduras appears in the current edition of This magazine.